IRS on the Road, value-based parenting and life balance ideas from world-traveling family coaches. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
Hello and welcome to IRS on the Road. It's a beautiful spring day where we are. We don't know where you are, but we are so happy to be back with you. We've got lots of fun things to talk about today.
What a day we had yesterday, honey. My goodness. We spent the entire day tending, that's the wrong word, supervising,
no, being having fun with four of our grandchildren.
Four of our smaller grandchildren. And we went to the zoo for most of the day.
And it was just the morning.
No. It was all I said on the way home was, if you want to know if you're old yet or not, just take your grandkids to the zoo for a day and you'll have no further doubts.
Well, speak for yourself, because I had a lot of fun. And it was just, you know, when it came to they were hungry, you don't like organizing things like that.
Well, it wasn't just that they were hungry. It was that it had been a long day and they tend to move pretty fast. And there's four of them and there's two of us. So we were outnumbered, and it was hard to keep up with them and hard to find them all, but they're so delightful, and it was so reminiscent of the old days, and we look at each other and we say, how did we handle nine children at once? And then you just realize parenting is a younger person's pursuit.
Well, you also realize that the older children did get older, and so there were some help, and also you realize how fast time goes by and what a moment in time it is. You just think, this is just a moment. This may never happen again, just like this, because these kids will never be this same age at this on this day. And it really, I loved it. I loved watching them run around. They were from 12 to 3. And they were so adorable.
The three-year-old was particularly fun. He's just learned to ride his bike, by the way. You should see that three-year-old ride his bike.
It's amazing. And, you know, the oldest is a granddaughter who is so adorable and so into makeup.
And cosmetics and fashion. And Linda and her are just like two little sorority sisters.
Not that I'm into makeup, but she's fascinated with everything. Oh my goodness, she's hilarious.
You know, before we get to our theme for today, let's talk a little more about what you just said, honey, about how kids change so fast, and we're oftentimes not ready for the change. We don't even see it coming, and we don't appreciate it while it's happening. And our daughters, our four daughters on their podcast, which we plug every chance we get, in the arena with the Iyer sisters. I was listening to their latest one the other day, and there was a lot of sort of angst about how fast their kids are growing up and moving on, right from our youngest daughter, whose kids are still really small, all the way up to the oldest ones, whose kids are now leaving home and so on, and a lot of, oh, why do they have to grow up and so on, but... And then they were even saying, you know, to just put a cap on this melancholy feeling, like when you put your little child to bed at night, in a way you're saying goodbye to him, because when he wakes up the next morning, he'll be different than he was today.
Yeah, that's right. I think about Tal too, our great man who lives in Switzerland. I mean, you know, we were so worried about his basketball career and all those things that were important when he was a teenager in college age. And now he has his own podcast about a lot of things, doing fun things with his brothers, but also with Dad, talking about Dad Mode, which is his book. I mean, who knew when those little kids were little, what they would be? I remember thinking, what is this child ever going to be? What is going to happen to him? If he can't even come home on time ever, what is going to happen? And it happens, and it's amazing.
Well, you know, it's going from parenting to grandparenting is a gradual process, of course, because you're still doing parenting and then you're moving into grandparenting and you're sometimes confusing the roles a little bit because, of course, in parenting, you are the steward. We love the word stewardship, and you are the one responsible. And with that comes a lot of duties and things that you need to take care of, and maintenance and so on, and discipline and feeding and clothing and all the rest. And when you're a grandparent, you leave behind that stewardship, but you take on a new stewardship of supporting and advising and hopefully cheerleading those grandkids and so on. And a lot of the people we're with all the time these days are playing both roles. We're playing both roles. If you're an empty nest parent, parenting is still a big, big challenge in your life. And if you're a grandparent, it just grows and grows and grows. And if you get really old like we are and you have some great grandkids, there's a third dimension of stewardship and responsibility. And how well are we playing those roles? That's the question. What we want to do today is pose a question, and I'm going to pose it to Linda, and I haven't told her about this, and we'll see how she answers it. And you guys, you listeners, pose the same question to yourself. And it's a big, big question with a lot of answers. And it sounds simple, but boy, oh boy, it's not simple. And the question is, who are you? Who are you right now? Who are you? How would you answer that? And there's a million ways. When you ask it just sort of perfunctorily, when you're meeting a new person, like, who are you? Maybe you mean, well, you're an accountant. Well, you're a dental therapist. Well, you're this. We often think of our profession first. Then ask it again. Who are you? Who are you really? Well, I'm a father. Well, who are you again? Well, I'm a basketball coach for my little kids. Well, who are you again? Well, I'm a violinist, or at least I used to be. Well, who are you again? Well, I'm someone who's worried about my knee being replaced. Or, I mean, the question has unlimited answers. But what I'm asking you, Linda, is what are the important now? If I said to you, if I prefaced it, start with the most important answers. Now, here's the question. Who are you? Where would you go? Where would you start? How would you answer that question?
Well, if you ask it that way... I think our first responsibility is that, or our first thing that comes to mind, I think who you really are is a child of God. Okay. And I am so sorry for people who don't realize that they're a child of God, that there's a thing that flung into existence and will end at the end of their life. I mean, it really changes everything when you think that you're a child of God and that your children are children of God. That changes everything as well, because wow, you treat them totally differently when you're mad at them.
So you're saying that what you answer first on that question may impact or change or influence profoundly all the other answers you could
exactly
give, right?
Yeah.
So you have a starting point, whereas someone without any kind of faith, if they were looking for that same starting point, what would they say? Who are you? Well, I'm a cosmic accident. I came about through some process that I'll never understand, but I sprung into existence when I was born or when I was conceived. So I'm a biological creation of my parents. Now you go on with your answers. Who are you? Who are you? What matters to you? What are the roles you play? You continue to ask the same question and answer it over and over again. But if that first answer is an answer based on faith, it influences all the other answers.
Of course.
Yeah.
Because our children are not just people that live with us. They are divine beings, and we need to, and in a way it makes it more scary, because we need to help them develop and become who they were intended to be on this existence until we go on to the next existence. And it really changes everything I've met very few real atheists, but it when I do, it kind of scares me because I just worry about how do they think? How do they think what's going to happen?
How do they put it together?
Yeah.
But you're such a good sport on this, honey, because we didn't talk about this beforehand, and you're wise in a wonderfully intuitive way. So let me push the envelope a little. So I'm asking you the question, who are you? And you're trying to answer it in the most, I don't know if profound's the right word, but in the most
broad,
in the deepest sense of the word. And I love the fact that your first answer is, I'm a child of God. Now, what if I expanded that and said, now you need to finish out the top three. What are the top three answers to the question, who are you? And if number one is, I'm a child of God, and then the question comes back, okay, now answer it again, who are you? And then a third time, who are you? I'm sorry, this is hard. I'm putting you in a tough spot, but what would your second and third answers be, do you think?
Well, the second would be all one. I'm a wife, mother, grandmother.
Wow, you just gave three, though.
Yeah, but that's all in one package because it's all about family.
Okay, so you're going to, you gotta have that second answer be, you can't say it in one thing.
Right.
You can't say, I'm your wife. Because if you say that, you've used up one of your two remaining answers. So you're a
part of an eternal family that includes a husband, children, and grandchildren.
Okay. You're doing pretty well. You're doing better than I would have. If you'd asked me those three questions, I would say, could I just have an hour or two to think about that? All right, so your answer number one is I'm a child of God. Number two, I am a what? I mean, I just wish there was a word, just one word.
Part of a family on earth.
I'm the mother part. I'm the matriarchal part. I'm the part that really. I'm really sort of the manager of that part. I'm
right.
You really are sort of the steward of that part.
Right. Right.
Of the family on all those different levels. Now, what is your third answer going to be?
Let's see. I think the third answer would be
the woman who keeps you in check.
I think I'm a creative person who needs to appreciate the earth while I'm here in a lot of different ways, intellectually and spiritually and socially, and
I actually love that. So if your third answer is I'm a creator, and by that you've kind of developed two little groupings of answers, because you're a writer, you're a musician, you're a person who tries to organize women in various ways. You're a leader of educators to try to help strengthen families and so on. And you're kind of putting all those in one basket when you say I'm a creator.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't have thought of that exhaustively, but but I there's a lot of things I can create, and that's one of the greatest gifts that we're given, I think. And every day you get up and think, how am I going to create this day? What am I going to do? Although those thoughts don't go usually as in the form of what do I have to do today, but different ways to look at that.
So that's such an interesting point, because is the question a reactionary one or an actionary one? In other words, can you, as you are doing, can you say, this is who I am because this is who I choose to be?
And I can create what is going to happen today. And in some ways, no, I don't have control, but I'm creative. I can do what I need to do to accomplish the day.
Because the other way to go on that would be to say, well, I'm a person who gets up and faces the day. I just do what the day tells me to do. And And that's not a bad answer, actually. In fact, we've been talking a lot about how those who are really natural in so many ways, they have goals, but they also, they know that every day will surprise them. And so a lot of their identity is, I am a reactor. I know how to react. I know how to respond to people, to situations which I can't control, right. But I know how to respond to them.
But then at the end of the day, you think, oh, I know how to respond, but I did that wrong.
Exactly.
You know, yeah. There's just so many things to think about.
I'm a person who's improving. Oh, wow, time flies when you're having fun. We're going to take a brief break, but when we come back, I'll give Linda a little warning. I'm going to ask the same question again and see where she'd go beyond those top three. And I want you all as listeners to think of the same thing. And ponder the possibility that how we answer, who am I, is the most important question we can ask ourselves in life.
So hang on. It'll be interesting to know what we do when we come back. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Iyer's on the Road. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
And we're back. What a fun topic. We really have not talked about this. And we woke up this morning, he said, let's just talk about who am I. Okay.
Well, you're the star of the show, and you are in life too, because I don't know anyone who knows who they are better than you know who you are.
Oh, I don't know. I think everybody wonders.
I think that's
if they're doing it, whether or not we know who we are, whether we're doing it right, you know.
Now, you may be listening and saying, well, the question itself is flawed because it's a selfish question. It's, who am I? Who am I? Shouldn't we be asking, what can I do for other people? Or what is the most important thing I can do today? Or shouldn't we be talking about other people, about things, about possibilities, rather than talking about ourselves? Who am I? But you kind of come around to the fact that it's the only one you really control. There, all the other things are out there, and you may be stewards over many of them, but it comes down to who you are in order to, I mean, it's basically the contrasting question of, am I all about doing or am I all about being, right? And right. Part of the whole second half of life, this course we're doing now and that you're part of just by listening to our podcast, part of the whole thing is that in the second half of life, hopefully we move away from our focus on doing. What am I going to do? What's my list? What am I going to accomplish? Check off the boxes. I did it. I did it. I did it. Moving toward, what am I becoming? About being instead of doing, because the being is what affects all the doing. And so that's why we think the question, who am I, is not a selfish question at all, because you can't answer it in a vacuum. The question of who am I has to do with your relationships with other people, with your own children, with the people you love most, with God on high, with the world around you. Who am I? Where do I fit in? What are my roles? And then it begs the question, am I just answering it from a hedonistic point of view as far as where I get pleasure, or am I sort of working in my faith and saying, who does God want me to be? What am I becoming, right?
Right.
So you can't say who am I, you can't answer that without also contemplating what am I becoming.
Right, although we don't do that often enough.
No, we don't.
You know, you just get stuck in the mire of things that are happening. We've got 100 things that are broken up the lake, and there's a lot of things going on that we just have no control over. And so I think it's just so good to focus in once in a while and really think about, what am I doing? What are we doing?
Examining.
Then, like, for example, we have way too much stuff, honey.
We're trying to get rid of a lot of it, aren't we? We're downsizing in a big way.
At the same time that we're upgrading. But it really is interesting to think about it, to think about what are we doing and why are we doing this?
Well, and I think, again, when we say, who am I and who am I becoming, it causes this constant personal examination. And some people say, oh my gosh, I'm tired of analyzing myself. I just want to get up in the morning and have a good day. Don't complicate it, you know. But we actually call ourselves and the people who've enrolled, and includes many of you in this online course, How to Live the Second Half of Life, we call ourselves SOCS, S-O-C-S, because we're following the admonition of Socrates, who said, the unexamined life is not worth living.
I'm giggling just because, honestly, Richard Iyer has to have an acronym for everything.
Really an acronym, it's an abbreviation, right?
SOCS, well.
We're followers kind of yeah. Socrates, only in the sense, and by the way, some people really argue with that. I'm like, Socrates was crazy. If you have to examine yourself every day and examine what you do every day and retrospect on it and do shadow work and figure out what's wrong with you and what's right with you, you'll just drive yourself crazy. And there is a right and a wrong way to do it. But I think what we're getting to is we feel that in the second half of life, that's the time to be SOCS. That's the time to re-examine. That's the time to evolve. That's the time to move from a focus on doing to a focus on being. When you say, who are you? Another way of phrasing it, although some would say it's a shallower way, would say, well, what are the roles I'm playing now? And the fact is, the roles we play, each of us as individuals and as couples and as families, the roles we play really change in the second half of life.
Yeah, they do. In fact, on Sunday, we're going to do a little fireside for our ward. We have so many dynamic young couples in our ward right now, and they're just starting out with life, and a lot of them are living life different than we did. I was determined to have 10 children. We only got to 9, but we added a few along the way. But we really, you know, the mentality is so different for these young people, because, and our kids included, many of them waited 5 years before they had children, and it's just the way it was. And then they had these 4 beautiful children. There's no right or wrong way to do it. But if you're not examining what you're doing, that's what we're really trying to talk to these kids, I think, on Sunday about, because they're just starting, but a lot of them are so focused on their work and their education. They've been well educated, and now they want to use their education, which is fabulous.
Right.
But they're not thinking so much about family.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up, because that's a perfect juxtaposition. Like, we in the second half of life are thinking, okay, who do I want to be now? And what are the most important roles I can play now? And we've got some latitude. We can say, gee, I can choose. Do I want to do this or this or this? And what do I want to be to my family? What do I want to be here and there and so on? And now you turn our attention to these young people we're speaking to on Sunday, and the question for them, who are you? That's so formative. They're like, well, I'm not a parent yet. Do I want to become one? Well, I'm not married yet. Do I want to get married? Well, I'm not, finished with school yet. Do I want to be? It's all about all these things that are so obviously in flux. What roles do I want to play now? And a lot of them are saying, well, I can't play too many roles at once. So if I'm really going to be a law graduate who goes into a firm and makes his mark in the legal world, that's got to be who I am. I can't dilute that by saying, oh, by the way, I'm also a parent, and I'm also a marriage partner, and I'm also an active person in my church, and I'm also trying to continue to be an athlete, and I'm also a musician. I got to kind of get rid of some of that stuff so that I can compete in the workplace and be a success, quote unquote, in my profession. Because if I cloud it up or dilute it with all these other roles, I won't win in this competition of my career.
Right. For which I have been so well educated. I mean, they've spent a thousand hours doing what they wanted to, and now they're launching into their lives, so to speak, being married and going forward with their education. And what do we do with this?
Well, which makes me remember an address you gave, and this will embarrass you a little, but I'm going to say it anyway. Linda was named one of six outstanding young women in the United States by the National Council of Women some time ago. You were in your 30s, and we went to New York City to have that award presented to you. And the other five winners, one was an astronaut, one was the head of a big legal firm, one was a surgeon, I don't remember the other two, and you were presented as a musician, but also as a mother of, at that time, I think, six or seven children.
I think six then, yeah.
And the talk you gave, which you just reminded me of, was essentially playing the role of a creator as a mother and the leader of children and the shepherd, so to speak, of these growing souls should not be minimized. That may be, and I remember the other thing I was reminded of, you said, I have what I consider to be a good education. I didn't get it in order to go out and compete in the workplace. In my case, I got it because I thought it would help me to be a better leader of my own family.
Yeah,
that brought the house down.
Well, they were very receptive to that because a lot of them were mothers. I mean, it was a mother's organization. I've obviously other things as well, but people are not thinking that way now as much.
I know.
And I don't know that that's absolutely the right way to do it. There are a lot of right ways to do it because a lot of women have wonderful careers and are able to also be wonderful mothers. It's really something.
The creative combining of the roles.
They need to think about it. Sometimes they just don't think.
And I think that's going to be our message on Sunday to these young couples, that when you're saying, should I pursue this career or should I have a child? Maybe the answer is both. Maybe we don't think about the both often enough. And maybe we jumped, I can't do both. I'll compromise each one of them. No. Rethink that. Is there a creative way to do both very, very well and to have each one even serve the other?
Yeah, it depends on what your job is, though. I mean, sometimes a job takes a lot more time than you can give if you're going to spend your time with children or having children and so on. And then there are helpers who come along. There are people who can help with children. And there it is such a different world. But I think what we need to talk to them about is think about it.
Examine.
What is your goal? Who are you?
Don't just follow the path that you see everyone else following.
Right, exactly.
Don't just adopt the priorities of those around you or who are competing with you in graduate school or whatever. Find your own way. So I since I was thinking about this and before I'd mentioned it to you, I did a little one page, honey. I'm not going to share it all because it won't relate to everyone listening, but I just put two things on each side of the page. The first one is who am I? Although I'm putting it now as a list. So who I am, colon. And then number two, for want of a better phrase, how I roll. Because that's the second question, right? It's like, who am I and how do I do it? How do I operate? What's my way of thinking? What's my way? How do I roll? What's my modus operandi? And just for what it's worth, and this is not like a list that should appeal to anyone else but me, but I said, who am I? I'm a writer. I'm a teacher. I'm a catalyst, trying to influence institutions that are larger than I am. I'm a son, a child of God. I'm one with Linda. I'm a patriarch. I don't like that term because it implies patriarchy, but I am the leader of a large family. I'm the male portion of the leadership of a large family, and Linda's the female portion. And I'm a grandfather. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And then on the how I roll side, I'm talking about what you were just getting into that we'll need to do another show on. Well, how do you do your analysis? When do you sit down and think? When do you reexamine your life? Is it a thing you do on Sundays? Is it a thing you go to get away for on a trip together and kind of analyze where you're going? How do you roll? How do you do these things?
Exactly. And it's just something to think about. It's been good to think about this for us, but we really challenge you to think about who you are this week and try to figure out.
And who you want to be next week.
Exactly. And next year and at the end of your life or whatever it is. But it really is important to examine your life, examine yourself, figure out where you are right now and how you can get to your end goal.
We'll again put the How to Live course in the show notes. We invite any of you to join us formally or just informally by listening to Hires on the Road. And thanks for being with us today.
We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.